Some atheists are happy, others are miserable. Similarly, some Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists are miserable, while others are happy. There may be statistical evidence bearing on the relationship between happiness and belief, or unbelief, but I doubt if it is a strong effect one way or the other. I find it more interesting to ask whether there is any good reason to feel depressed if we live without God. I shall end this book by arguing, on the contrary, that it is an understatement to say that one can lead a happy and fulfilled life without supernatural religion. First, though, I must examine the claims of religion to offer consolation. Consolation, according to the Shorter Oxford Dictionary, is the alleviation of sorrow or mental distress. I shall divide consolation into two types.
1. Direct physical consolation. A man stuck for the night on a bare mountain may find comfort in a large, warm St. Bernard dog, not forgetting, of course, the brandy barrel around its neck. A weeping child may be consoled by the embrace of strong arms wrapped around her and reassuring words whispered in her ear. 2. Consolation by discovery of a previously unappreciated fact or a previously undiscovered way of looking at existing facts. A woman whose husband has been killed in war may be consoled by the discovery that she is pregnant by him, or that he died a hero. We can also get consolation through discovering a new way of thinking about a situation. A philosopher points out that there is nothing special about the moment when an old man dies. The child that he once was died long ago, not by suddenly ceasing to live, but by growing up. Each of Shakespeare's seven ages of man dies by slowly morphing into the next. From this point of view, the moment when the old man finally expires is no different from the slow deaths throughout his life. A man who does not relish the prospect of his own death may find this changed perspective consoling. Or maybe not, but it is a potential example of consolation through reflection. Mark Twain's dismissal of the fear of death is another.
I do not fear death. I had been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born, and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it.
The aperçu changes nothing about the fact of our inevitable death, but we have been offered a different way of looking at that inevitability, and we may find it consoling.
Thomas Jefferson, too, had no fear of death, and he seems to have believed in no kind of afterlife. By Christopher Hitchens's account,
as his days began to wane, Jefferson more than once wrote to friends that he faced the approaching end without either hope or fear. This was as much as to say, in the most unmistakable terms, that he was not a Christian.
Robust intellects may be ready for the strong meat of Bertrand Russell's declaration in his 1925 essay, What I Believe.
I believe that when I die, I shall rot, and nothing of my ego will survive. I am not young, and I love life, but I should scorn to shiver with terror at the thought of annihilation. Happiness is none the less true happiness because it must come to an end, nor do thought and love lose their value because they're not everlasting. Many a man has borne himself proudly on the scaffold. Surely the same pride should teach us to think truly about man's place in the world. Even if the open windows of science at first make us shiver after the cosy, indoor warmth of traditional humanizing myths, in the end the fresh air brings vigor and the great spaces have a splendor of their own.
I was inspired by this essay of Russell's when I read it in my school library at the age of about 16, but I had forgotten it. It is possible that I was paying unconscious homage to it when I wrote in A Devil's Chaplain in 2003.
There is more than just grandeur in this view of life, bleak and cold though it can seem from under the security blanket of ignorance. There is deep refreshment to be had from standing up and facing straight into the strong, keen wind of understanding. Yeats's Winds That Blow Through the Starry Ways.
How does religion compare with, say, science in providing these two types of consolation? Looking at type one consolation first, it is entirely plausible that the strong arms of God, even if they are purely imaginary, could console in just the same kind of way as the real arms of a friend, or a St. Bernard dog with a brandy cask around its neck. But of course, scientific medicine can also offer comfort, usually more effectively than brandy. Turning now to type 2 consolation, it is easy to believe that religion could be extremely effective. People caught up in a terrible disaster, such as an earthquake, frequently report that they derive consolation from the reflection that it is all part of God's inscrutable plan. No doubt good shall come of it in the fullness of time.